Hi, I'm Robert Green, and with me this segment is Damian Edwards.
Hey, hey Damian. How are you?
Thanks for coming on.
Not a problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Damian is a program manager on the web team, the ASP.NET team.
That's right.
And also gave a talk yesterday morning.
I did,
on,
yes.
One ASP.NET and what was the rest of the title?
VS 2013 Web Tooling Preview.
Something like that. It's
yeah.
A nice long name.
A long name, yeah.
Excellent talk. I highly recommend everybody go watch that if they haven't already seen it. And if you were there or saw it, you probably want to watch it twice.
Yeah.
Because there was an awful lot in there.
It was. I think I had 7 or 8 different sections, and I just went from one end to the other and tried to show as much as
Excellent.
I possibly could in the time. So
your product team is moving forward. There's lots going on. That's
yeah.
awesome.
So I actually started out the talk.
Cool
I said we just released a bunch of tooling updates in the Visual Studio 2012 Update 2. After we had sort of released them ourselves as part of what we called ASP.NET and Web Tooling 2012.2 update earlier in the year.
Right.
And so I started saying, hey, look, even in just the last 2 months, we've released all this great stuff. And that was one slide. It took me about 30 seconds and said, but we haven't stood still. And then I went into everything that we're doing, working on now for the next version. So
cool.
Yeah.
So we definitely want to talk about that. But before we get there, I want to talk about this concept of one ASP.NET.
Yes, one ASP.NET.
One ASP.NET. So, you know, you've, from the layman's perspective, I guess, there's you might think of there being this divergent path. So ASP.NET. I mean, just like in languages, you do VB or you do C#. And
right.
yes, there are people that do both, but basically people specialize. Or you build client apps, or you build web apps. Some people do both, but you basically specialize. And they're kind of divergent paths, and you stand on other sides of the fence throwing things at each other
right.
and making fun of each other. And in the ASP.NET world, I've heard many people talk about the same divergent path between web forms and MVC.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a web form developer, or your MVC in web forms is very structured, very good for line of business apps.
Mm-hmm.
The model is similar to the model that you would have on the desktop, but it's tightly coupled. So now you go over to MVC world where you have MVC pattern, and if you're doing XAML work, you got to do MVVM.
Yep.
You get the separation of concerns, but you don't have that with web forms. So what do? Ditch everything and switch over to MVC,
mm-hmm.
but it's not as highly optimized for your desktop app, for line of business apps, blah, blah, blah. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Is there that dichotomy? And what is, so the one ASP.NET kind of says, well, no, that's, the dichotomy is not for real. You can use them both. And I will stop talking in a second now. So, and let you do the talking.
You've basically answered the question, right?
Hopefully I've just set up the question.
No, you have.
But what is one ASP.NET, and how do you merge the two divergent worlds? How does that work? What does the tooling do for you? Go.
So, you're right in saying that we started out with just ASP.NET, right? It was basically web forms, and we optimized the framework around this idea of building line of business, component-driven application. I mean,
right.
No secret there. The framework was very well set up for that and was very successful at doing that. Rich third-party ecosystem of control vendors that are still doing well. A lot of them are behind me here
yep.
at TechEd. And it's still an absolutely valid approach. And then we created the MVC sort of feature set or alternate product, which builds on top of the same platform. It literally builds on top of the same base, the same system.web core runtime.
Mm-hmm.
And offers an alternate approach to building web applications, which is more patterns focused, as you said, less component driven. So you're not building at a higher level abstraction. You're building with the fundamentals of the web. You're writing HTML, perhaps with some helper methods to code spit that for you at runtime. But you're required to know quite a lot more about what's going on because it's all about control in a lot of ways. But ultimately, the two exist, and they can exist side by side, and we want people to use what makes them happy. Now, a lot of the time, what makes people happy is using both, because they may feel for them that web form solves one class of problems for them in a really good and productive way,
mm-hmm.
and MVC solves a different class of problems. And so you're left with a problem. It's like, okay, well, I have both of these frameworks. The tooling has really only been set up to let you work on one or the other.
Yeah.
And you mentioned this idea of, like, I would say, file new project, and then I'm presented with a choice.
You get to choose.
What do you want to do? Web forms, dynamic data,
MVC, right.
MVC, web API, whatever it might be. And it's almost as though, well, we're forcing you to make this choice now. And if you get it wrong, I'm sorry, you'll have to start over again. Now, the sort of irony is that at runtime, if you look at how ASP.NET works once it's actually deployed, it doesn't care. All it knows about is whatever's registered in your web.config mm-hmm. file and what assemblies are compiled in the bin folder. It doesn't matter if it's MVC or web forms or any other type of abstraction layer on top. It just works.
Right.
And so the idea about One ASP.NET is really embracing this idea of the hybrid application, because that's what ASP.NET is anyway.
Sure.
And making sure that the tooling and both the components that we build that are common, that sort of address common concerns, like authentication and dependency injection, logging, those type of things, that they're designed to work in a framework agnostic way, so you can compose them together into, you know, what we consider real world applications. A file new project on stage is great for a demo, but we know that, you know, the vast majority of developers are building apps or working on the same app every day for a long time. And so that was MVC and web forms, and then you would have noticed in the last 18 months to 2 years, we've exploded in kind of the number of other frameworks we have. So we kind of had MVC and web forms first, and then MVC. Then we added web pages, which is a very simple inline scripting style web page, a bit like classic ASP, but using C-sharp and a very nice markup syntax with Razor, which MVC got as well. But now we also have Web API, which is, you know, focused very much on delivering services using HTTP as the transport standard.
Right. Which is attractive to all types of people. Even if I'm building a XAML app, I might decide, well, yes, WCF works great, but Web API, a little bit simpler, a little bit less heavy, more RESTful. I'm just going to build my service layer in Web API.
Absolutely.
So that, regardless of what your front end is.
Well, the great thing about Web API is because it's all based on just HTTP, any HTTP compliant client can call it. I mean, WCF is amazingly powerful and offers a lot of standards-based interoperability across lots of different mechanisms for shunting data back and forward. But if you just say, hey, we're going to do HTTP, and it's going to be XML, JSON, you know, images, documents, Web API is a perfect fit. It's really designed for that. So we throw that into the mix now. And then we have something like Signaler, you know, near and dear to my heart, which has a real-time element, this idea of the real-time web, where we're doing transport negotiation underneath you and utilizing whatever mechanism is available at the time to do this real-time moving of data from the server to the client and back again. So now you've got, what, four frameworks in the mix, maybe five if you include web pages. And then you've got other higher-level things like dynamic data, which were built on top of web forms, which gives you this runtime scaffolding on top of your data layer, which is really useful for the types of interfaces like admin, where, I mean, you have a data model, and all you want to be able to do is administer the data model using a UI. You don't need complex, you know, user interaction experiences. You just need a way to edit the data. Dynamic data is a fantastic fit. You've got all these things together in one application. I know people are doing this. One ASP.NET is what it's all about. We want to make sure that that works, and that's actually an accepted paradigm.
Okay, so let me ask you a specific question. So I've done web forms, I've been building web forms, and I'm now sold on this separation of concerns.
Yep.
So I like the idea that MVC has separation of concerns, but I've been building web forms and I'm going down that path. How do I introduce separation of concerns into web forms? So, you know, back to comparing, if I'm a XAML developer, I just pick up the MVVM pattern.
Right.
That's all I need to do.
Right.
I'm a web forms developer, can I just pick up the MVC pattern or some similar pattern?
I will say, I mean, even if you're a XAML developer, it's not as easy as just picking up the MVVM pattern. I mean,
you have to make a choice between a framework, and
I'm speaking as someone who did some WPF programming not that long ago and had to deal with all this. But yeah, if you're a web forms developer,
but you don't have to go back to file new project.
That's right. I mean, it is an enhancement. It's a pattern you can apply to the existing technology toolset you're using, and the toolset's very good. When you look at web forms, you made some comments about how tightly coupled it is, which is, you know, fairly true. And it really wasn't designed with this idea of patterns-based approach in mind, the ability to replace things with your own implementations, either for the benefits of unit testing or composability, so you can plug things in at runtime. But I will say it's not that difficult to add that sort of composition to web forms. There's a couple ways you can do it. First of all, when we built MVC, we created a bunch of abstractions for a lot of the primitives that are in ASP.NET and used by web forms. So like the HTTP context, request response model, session, cookies, all those type of things were abstracted. So we have new types that are unit testable, they are replaceable. And while they may not be first class properties on your page constructs and things that you're using in web forms, it's very easy to use them even from a web forms base. And there are adapters and those types of things available. And once you've sort of accepted that, you can apply a model like MVP, Model View Presenter,
yep.
on top of web forms. And you can either do it manually. You don't have to buy into a framework. You can just say, hey, I'm going to ensure that when I write this this method in my code behind, that I don't interact with any control logic. I'm going to ensure that any dependencies for this logic that are injected in via parameters so that I can easily unit test that method because I don't have to create a control tree and deal with a postback or anything like that. And once you've started writing your code like that, it's easy to move those methods into different classes.
Yep.
So now you get that true separation. It's like, well, previously I may have been doing my data access in my page load event and then taking the raw data set and shoving it onto the data source property and calling data bind.
Right.
Super, super tightly coupled, of course. Very easy to
do. Very easy.
Yeah, three or four lines of code,
very
you're done.
Quick and dirty
but
easy.
Extremely tightly coupled.
Yes.
And so reuse is difficult. Testing is difficult if you want to do unit testing. It's not that far of a stretch to take that code and factor it out into different responsibilities, maybe a data access class or a repository pattern or that type of query, however far down that rabbit hole you want to go.
Yeah.
And then you can have this concept of a presenter, which is similar to a view model in MVVM. But in a presenter, you basically have all your data operations, you have your business
yep.
logic, you may call out into things that do business logic. And then you raise events that the view can interact with. And there's a framework that I actually helped write, WebForms MVP. It's an open source framework. So if you're interested in that type of development in WebForms, I recommend you look at WebForms MVP. It also has support for common IOC containers.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if you're really going towards that separation of concerns layer, the idea of an IOC container, the ability to have your composition of the concrete types that actually implement the contracts
right.
be located in one place in your application and be resolved by this container, it's fantastic. And then your presenter doesn't have to worry about, well, where is this iFoo data going to come from? It's just given to me at runtime because I've registered it in my inversion of control container.
Right.
And so a common, MVVM frameworks have the same facility. So in WebForms, I would recommend looking at WebForms MVP. Now, that doesn't mean I'm saying you can't look at MVC either. If you want to move from WebForms to MVC and you think you have good reasons for doing that, all power to you.
Right.
You can absolutely go that approach. But I don't want people to think that they have to move to MVC in order to get those benefits.
Right. There was an article in, was it the most recent MSDN magazine, about literally how to take the MVC libraries
right.
and use them in a WebForms app,
yep.
right?
Absolutely. I think there's even a NuGet package that Scott Hanselman created, which was allowed you to pull MVC in its entirety into a WebForms project. And of course, one of the goals of the One ASP.NET work we're doing in Visual Studio 2013 preview is an ASP.NET project is just an ASP.NET project. So it doesn't matter whether you start by choosing WebForms or MVC, the tooling is now set up to let you add a controller to a WebForms project or to add a dynamic data to an MVC project.
So that will be in 2013.
2013, yeah, preview.
Okay, so that was start to answer my next question was, do you see a time when the tools will help you do this?
I do. It's in the near future.
It's around the corner.
It's around the corner. So in 2013 preview, we'll have the beginning of this.
Right.
This is not something we're going to solve in one go.
Sure.
This is going to be a journey. So we've got some of the things we're doing in that release to sort of get us along that path. We've got a new unified project dialog when you create a project. And so instead of saying file new and then seeing 16 project templates that you have to choose from, there's one, ASP.NET web application. And when then you select that one, hit OK, you'll now be presented with a secondary dialog, which is similar to the MVC project template selection dialog.
Yep.
And in there, you'll see MVC, WebForms, SPA, Web API. But even if you pick MVC, you'll still be able to tick the WebForms box, which will give you some folders and common things that are useful in WebForms.
Okay.
And conversely, if you chose the WebForms template, you can still tick MVC, and we'll add a controllers folder and a views folder and that type of stuff for you as well. There's also an authentication button so that you can configure the authentication model for your application up front as a cross-cutting concern rather than it being just another variant, so like another multiplier of all the things. So you click that and you can choose no auth, Windows auth, individual accounts with Facebook and Google, that type of thing. And we're going to add organizational auth as well. So if you want to do federated auth with Azure Active Directory or O365, you'll be able to configure that as well. So there's that dialogue, and there's a whole bunch of new template work we've done to improve that experience as well. We're using Bootstrap for our, it's a CSS library originally built by some people at Twitter, and now sort of standalone. very popular. It sort of rose to amazing heights in the last year and a bit. And it's fantastic because it gives you a common language for doing CSS layout and theming. And I know CSS is a very steep learning curve for a lot of people, especially mm-hmm. in the ASP.NET community, especially if you've come from web forms. And having a grid-based layout system like Bootstrap makes it very, very simple to do this layout. So because all of our templates use that now, it's very easy to kind of share those assets. And you can go to a Bootstrap theming site and just download a theme, apply it, and you'll get that theme immediately, which is really, really nice. Then we've taken the scaffolding system that was originally part of the MVC tooling, and we've now rebuilt that from the ground up as a standalone ASP.NET scaffolding system.
Okay.
And so now you can scaffold a controller into web forms. You can scaffold web forms now. So you can, I can write my model class, my person class. I can say add scaffold, choose the web forms template, and then be presented with a dialog where I select the person class, say please create me a new entity framework code first context, generate me some views using this master page, hit OK, and it spits out, you know, what we consider to be best practice web forms, sort of CRUD forms, using Entity Framework CodeForest, the Bootstrap, dynamic data, all the really good stuff, just like we used to get in the MVC scaffolding. But it's the same scaffolding system now. Web API, Signaler, MVC, web forms will all use the same scaffolding system.
Very cool.
So it's all one big happy family.
Cool.
Yeah.
So tell us about some of the other additional features coming.
Yeah, so we've got new versions of the frameworks coming. So MVC 5, Web API 2, Signaler 2, Entity Framework 6. So let's see where I can start at. MVC 5, the biggest thing in MVC 5 is, well, across all of our frameworks, we're upping the minimum .NET version to .NET 4.5.
Okay.
So we're embracing .NET 4.5, async top to bottom, that type of thing. So .NET 4 is being dropped. The MVC exclusive tooling is being removed. So as I mentioned, we now have a common scaffolding system, a common project system. There is no concept of an MVC project anymore. Like at the tooling level, it's an ASP.NET project. We removed that flavor of project. So some people before may have, in the early days of MVC, would have seen what happens when you created an MVC project on one machine and then tried to open it on another machine that didn't have the MVC tooling installed. You just get an error. Because VS says, oh, I don't understand this project type. I can't open it.
Right.
That's gone away completely. It's just ASP.NET now. In Web API 2, again, we've moved from 4.0 to 4.5 as our base minimum. Whole bunch of features in Web API 2. We've got two fantastic community contributed features as well. First one is support for cores. That's cross-origin resource sharing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing HTTP APIs and you need to enable cross-domain requests using AJAX, then you need to understand cores. So we now have nice fine-grained cores control, so you can have very fine control over what APIs in your application are callable by what domains and with what headers and what verbs based on the rules that you implement, which is really nice.
Cool.
We have support for batching, so you can now have an HTTP client and a server, so your HTTP API can be split up into various actions, but you may want to send a single request that actually splits out into three or four different actions to make it less chatty. We do that with batching, so that's now supported in Web API 2 as well. I'm trying to think what other features we added. We had cores, and there was one other thing I demoed yesterday, and I'm struggling to remember what it was now, and it was really good. There's an entirely new security pipeline as well that we're working on. So one of the common problems we've had with Web API 1 is that once you've created these great services, you can call them from AJAX fairly easily, and you use cookies for auth like we have for years. But once you want to call them from a rich app, like on a phone, or on a Windows 8 device or a desktop device, then you can't use cookies for auth anymore because you're not in a browser. It's very difficult to do that. And so you need to use some type of header-based authentication, which means you need to generate a token, you need to make sure that token gets sent up in the header, you need to authenticate it every time. So we've built that support in Web API 2, but we've done it in such a way that it's a common concern across all of the frameworks. So again, back to that one ASP.NET idea, we have this common layer that essentially sits in front of them now based on a standard called OWIN, the Open Web Interfaces for .NET. And so now we have this common auth layer that works across all of our platforms, web forms, MVC, Signaler, Web API, and the new templates will be using it by default.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some new features in there. Signaler 2, again, 4.0 to 4.5, common theme there.
Right.
We've added a couple of new clients for Signaler, so we're going to support a Xamarin client. So if you're doing .NET development for iOS, Android, or Mac, you'll now be able to use Signaler on those apps if you're using the Xamarin suite as well. That's really cool. Heap of bug fixes, lots and lots of bug fixes in Signaler 2. We're really looking at how people are using the product because it only came out earlier in the year.
Yeah, so what are some of the scenarios, some of the core scenarios you're seeing, and what are some of the patterns that people should be thinking about using Signaler?
So there's really three canonical examples that we kind of give to people when we talk about Signaler. There's the server push, like the server is broadcasting the same payload to a whole bunch of clients at the same time. Classic server push scenario, stock ticker update, that type of thing. And so that's one distinct scenario. The second one is more of a peer-to-peer scenario. So as I add more clients, I'm adding more traffic, like a chat application.
Right, so most of, in the talks I've seen, most of the demos are chat clients, which is a great way of just focusing on what the thing does.
Right. And then we have a third scenario, which we call high-frequency real-time, and it's really around real-time gaming, where you're trying to do real-time interaction between two people or lots of people, and you need that high frequency of updates. We're talking like 25 hertz from the server to the client, and maybe the client to the server is 5 to 10 hertz. And so there's a lot of data being moved between the client and the server, and then they all have different traffic characteristics and different load characteristics. And so they're kind of the three canonical examples. But I say to people, when looking at ways to use Signaler in their application, anytime you've seen a user hit F5 to refresh the browser when using your app, or you've used Ajax polling to refresh some data every 5 seconds, 10 seconds, Signaler is going to be a fantastic candidate for you. And then if you've looked at a desktop application previously and perhaps used sockets to get that real-time sort of data, and now you want to achieve the same thing on the web, Signaler, again, is going to be a great choice.
So is kind of in-app in-application notifications a scenario?
Yep, real-time monitoring, dashboards, collaboration. Yep. Maybe I want to work on a document at the same time as you. I really like giving the idea of a concurrency management. So a lot of people may be thinking, well, I just write text boxes over data applications, right? I mean, my users just enter data in forms and submit, and they do error validation, that type of thing. But a lot of these applications have to deal with concurrency. That means that maybe you and I are currently trying to work on the same record at the same time, and there are a whole bunch of mechanisms for dealing with that. It's optimistic concurrency, pessimistic concurrency with semaphores, there's no concurrency, last user wins. Well, if you add a real-time layer on top of that, now we can do things like you and I have the same form open at the same time. You tab into one field and start editing it while I've already moved through that field having made a change, but I haven't saved it yet. Once you commit that change to the database, I can get an alert immediately next to that field saying, hey, Damien, the data has changed.
So let me get this straight. You're suggesting that we overturn 20 years worth of the familiar pattern where I enter all my data, press save, and only then am I told that you've been changing the data?
And there's an error and you lost all your changes, you have to do it again.
You are radical.
I know, I am radicalizing text boxes.
You may be banned from the industry.
Look, I really try and look for opportunities to disrupt the text boxes over data industry. So I'm really passionate about that idea of applying real time to even the most rudimentary entry applications. Because if you can improve that data, sort of that UI,
your
that
users
feedback,
will love that.
The users will appreciate that.
Instead of the usual pattern of, did all this typing, too bad.
Optimistic concurrency exception, try again.
And guess what? Damien's more important than you lose anyway.
You lose anyway, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, and you can really take that idea to its extreme and say, well, you know, show some type of merge conflict UI then. So I can say, well, here's your changes, here's my changes, which one do you want to do? And that type of thing.
Right. So then if we've made changes, you could even extend that to, I make some changes, you make some changes, they conflict.
Yes.
We essentially move into a collaborative, chatty thing where we work out this conflict kind of in real time as we're working on the same data.
Yeah, I mean, if there's presence involved and I know that you're online still on that record, I could absolutely do that.
Right.
Yeah. So I think if you really have to sort of rethink what's possible now once you add this real-time layer to your application. So we're really hoping people embrace it and start to use it.
There's an opportunity for the third parties to invent the rock, paper, scissors control to resolve this.
Absolutely. That's a really good idea. Especially, I was walking around talking to some vendors, and we're already seeing vendors start to use Signaler in their control suites and in their product suites. So I'm really, really excited about that. It's fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Do we have any questions? You guys can submit questions. We got a few minutes left. I don't see any yet, but if you have questions for Damien, send them in.
Yeah.
In the meantime, what else is new?
So Entity Framework 6 it will be as part of the same wave of products that we're bringing
out. Rowan's going to be in that chair tomorrow.
There you go. He will tell you all about that. I mean, there is a very long feature list there. The big ones at the top of my head are async support now for querying and saving, which is a huge, huge deal. Support for stored procs with code-first models, which I know was something a lot of people wanted. A big one that I really like is support for multiple contexts per database. And the reason I like that is that it really aids in library composition. It means that I, as a library author now, can create Damien's amazing Foo library, put it on NuGet, and I can use Entity Framework internally in my library to do data persistence. And then when you install the library, you can configure it to use the same database that your context is using, but you don't have to use my context. So I don't have to expose it. It can just be an implementation detail. Okay. Mm-hmm. That all now works in EF6. And a whole bunch of more features that I'm sure Rowan will go into as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
New stuff in web forms, new stuff in MVC.
Not in this
new
release.
Stuff
so this is
editors.
Well, that's actually a lie. So we do have some. So web forms gets the scaffolding.
Right.
So this is not a .NET release. So we don't have new stuff in web forms like that. But we do have friendly URLs, which we added in the 2012.2 update, is in the template still. So we get those nice extensionless URLs for web forms customers. We get the scaffolding support for web forms customers and the new templates with Bootstrap. So that's, I think that's a really good set of stuff for web forms. For MVC, I think I mentioned a few things. That they get all the templating stuff as well. They get the new project system and the new templates as well. Most of the feature work has been concentrated in Web API, Signaler, and EF this time around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you talk about IDE enhancements?
I can't. I can only talk about what the web team has done.
All right.
I've pretty much talked. So I can tell you about some of the web stuff. So there's a fantastic new feature called Codename Artery. And it's the idea of creating a live link between the browser that you've launched when you're developing and Visual Studio. So previously what we would have known is we've gone through this idea of having a design surface inside Visual Studio. And then in 2012, we introduced Page Inspector, which actually hosted the browser inside
Page
Visual
Inspector,
Studio.
Once you learn what it's doing, is an amazing tool.
Pretty amazing.
When you first see it, it's almost like one of these strobe lights.
Yeah.
And it's very, kind of just have to step back. Once you pay close enough attention and actually see what it's doing, it's really
cool. So we got
some
great feedback on that. And one of the biggest ones was, we really like the feature set, but we don't like the fact that it's inside Visual Studio still. And I want to use it with Firefox or Chrome.
It's easy to lose track of where you are. It's easy to hide the code window.
Yep.
And if you don't have a big enough monitor, one window's this big, one window's that big. And
so what we've done is we've created this idea of let's just create a link between your page running in the browser and VS. And we call that Artery. And it actually uses Signaler behind the scenes. So I'm very happy about that. And so the first feature that we've got using that is what's called live refresh. Mm-hmm. So you can make changes in VS, save, hit a button in the toolbar, and it will refresh all the browsers that are currently connected.
Nice.
They don't have to have been launched by VS. They can be a mobile emulator. They can be an external browser if you've launched it and opened up IIS Express that way. And we'll refresh all of those. But now that we have that live link, we have an amazing set of ideas that we hope to be able to build in so that you get sort of a marriage between the dev tools in the browser and the Visual Studio tools.
Very
cool. Yeah.
We've got a couple questions. When are you going to add native PowerShell support to ASP.NET?
I don't really understand the context of that question. So
I'm not really sure
what they mean by that.
So iHeart PS, if you could follow up with that.
Yeah.
Dan Sorensen, will there be an upgrade path from MVC 3/4 to 5?
It'll be a similar upgrade path to what there's been previously. We've never really created first-class tooling to go from 3 to 4 and 4 to 5. There were a few unofficial tools that we had. But because there is no project GUID, no project flavor anymore, it's going to be much easier moving forward. It's now just a reference, a NuGet reference.
Okay.
So there will be a little bit of pain going from 4 to 5 just because you'll need to remove that project flavor in order to get all the goodness of the MVC 5 well. But once you've done that, it's all clear sailing from there.
Right.
Yeah.
Fragara writes, with Roslyn, any plans to use it in ASP.NET?
So Roslyn, for those who don't know, is the idea of a compiler as a service, a managed compiler for languages. Today, ASP.NET compiles code at runtime using the C# compiler and the VB compiler at runtime. We've done experiments with Roslyn. There are some public experiments with Roslyn on ASP.NET as well. David Ebo, one of the architects on the group, recently posted a Razor variant using Roslyn, and it was 1,000 times faster in its compilation stage than using the old stuff. So a lot of positive stuff, and we do have plans to look at using Roslyn in the future, yeah.
Okay. Do you understand Gopakumar's...
The VMM reporting module is back or not? I'm not familiar with what VMM stands for. Virtual Machine Manager, maybe? I don't know.
To be more specific, no dependencies with OPS Manager for the reporting, VMM standalone reporting module. Is it any clearer
now? Still not tweaking any. Sorry. Any lights there.
Okay, I'll ask you a question.
Sure.
So if I'm building Windows Store apps on Windows 8, I kind of have a choice of going native, so writing HTML, JavaScript, WinJS, writing the native Windows Store app, or of course I could write HTML, JavaScript, CSS, so sort of, you know, cross-platform, runs on the machine. I've heard many people say that, you know, you build it as a web app, people can't tell the difference between that and the native store app. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that, and what would you recommend to somebody wondering what to build?
That's a really good question. I don't think there's any single answer to that. I mean, there are trade-offs depending on what you choose. So, obviously, one of the great advantages of being able to write native apps using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript is skill reuse and code reuse, library reuse, and tooling reuse. I mean, you can basically reuse all of those assets when you build your application. However, there are certain functionalities available to those actual native HTML applications that aren't available to web pages. The ability to use charms, for instance, to share with the various WinJS APIs and those type of things. And so you can build an amazing mobile experience or a device-centric experience purely in the browser. Mm-hmm. I used some fantastic ones recently. But there are some times when you need to get access to the bare metal, essentially, or you need to integrate in with other experiences, other applications, for instance, via common contracts that can really only be provided by the platform you're running on if everyone agrees on that.
Right.
And so I think it's just a decision that any application developer needs to make for themselves as to what that trade-off might be. Now, as I said, one of the advantages, and whether it's using HTML or C# and XAML, if you've written a desktop application and you've used Silverlight before, I mean, you can reuse your skill sets with XAML and C# there in building a Windows 8 store app or a Windows Phone 8 app there. Mm-hmm. And so it really comes down, there's no concrete answer, and it all comes down to what makes sense for you. But I would say look at the benefits and make a trade-off decision that makes sense for you.
So. Yep. George wants to know, what are the big changes in MVC5?
I actually said them all. So they're, as I said, most of the features have been focused around Web API 2 and SignalR and EF6. The bigger changes are the change in framework dependency requires 4.5 now, and the drastic overhaul of the tooling experience. That's the really, really big changes in MVC5. Yep.
How are we doing on time? All right, we got 2 more minutes. So Richard Clements asks, what improvements are being made around SSRS reports in MVC?
SQL Server Reporting Services reports in MVC.
Yep.
We get this question a lot, and I'm sorry to say, I don't have a really good answer for this. The SSRS reporting functionality is and never was built by the ASP.NET team. It was built by the SQL Server team.
Okay.
I am not going to speak for them. I don't know what their plans are. But we do get this question a lot. We pass the feedback on to them. Mm-hmm. But we should try. I'll take it on here to go and find out a little bit more, because we do get this question a lot from our customers.
Okay.
I know it's important to them. So.
Okay. Any new tooling coming in Internet Explorer? Any enhancements to the developer tooling in Internet Explorer that we can talk about?
Come to build.
Okay.
Above my pay grade.
Okay. So I guess that pretty much covers it.
Yeah, sounds
so
good.
So people should definitely go watch your talk and see the details.
Yep, absolutely.
And I love the idea. I mean, you know, when we said we were going to do this, I had the sense that I was going to ask you this question about, you know, tell me the plan for the tooling to make one ASP.NET better. And I'm going to tell you, the answer winds up being a lot better than I had expected.
Oh, that's great.
I thought it was, well, you know, we'll get there over time.
Yep.
But the answer is kind of like, well, yeah, we're kind of there now.
We're getting there now.
I love the idea of one ASP project.
Yep.
And then whether it's web forms or MVC or web API, those are just things you do inside that project.
Absolutely.
I love the idea of bringing it closer together, making it a lot easier out of the box for people to not only know that you can combine them, but to actually do it.
Yep, absolutely.
It's one thing to, you know, read an article and say, well, here are the steps I took today, and that's, oh, that's very interesting, but, you know, if I'm doing file new project, I'm not going to know that.
No, you want to set up by default.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we want. And
I'll
say,
that's awesome.
We'll be talking about a lot more of Build in a few weeks' time as well. So
cool.
Lots more to come.
Also on the ASP.net website.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
In the books and articles and whatnot. And
usual
fantastic.
Channels.
Fantastic.
Yep.
All right.
Awesome.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rob.
All right. Thanks, everybody.